Hello, and welcome to One Inch Per Scary Podcast. I'm Kirsty Sayer. I'm delighted to be with you today. I hope that you caught my last episode with Joe Garcia. It was truly one of my favorite episodes to date. Such a fun conversation. So many truth bombs and nuggets in there. Just really light, but also just incredibly helpful, I thought. You know, we talked a lot about his... you know, what mentality is necessary for a fighter to have. And truly, it's necessary for us all at some point in our lives to kind of take on that mentality, because life does beat us up from time to time. And that's how we get stronger, and we get back up or we stay down, and that's that. So really tune into that. Also, another thing that we discuss is, you know, how grateful I am that I did choose to go one inch or several steps per scary by walking into this fight club, you know, as a 40-year-old woman who had never done anything remotely like this or didn't have any affinity for it. And, you know, how much it helped me along the way in my PTS journey, and really how, you know, the most unexpected things and places and people can be exactly what we need if we are open-minded and we, you know, place ourselves in the path of them. So it's a really fun and I think very valuable episode. I hope you will check it out. Thanks again to Joe Garcia for being part of that. It was really great. Today I am solo, and I'm excited to talk to you about something that I have been pondering and unpacking for a really long time now. You might notice that I'm moving away in general from my social media and here from talking as much about PTSD, and that's both deliberate and intentional and just a natural evolvement. As I am doing so much better and feeling so much better, I don't identify with that part as much, thank goodness. At the same time, I really am aware that a lot of my readers and listeners sort of jumped on board because they themselves were struggling with PTSD, struggling with some kind of mental illness, or had family members who were and or are. And I really feel a sense of wanting to continue to be a voice for PTSD, a voice of hope, be able to share all the things that worked for me to take me from being catatonic to triggered and suicidal to just truly out of control in my own life and not knowing how I'd feel from one moment to the next, never mind 1 week to the next. I feel right now really stable, and I would like to continue to talk about what brought me here as much or more than I spoke about PTSD when I was in the midst of it and suffering, because I think that I'd like to, you know, the weight of this podcast needs to fall toward the hope. And I hope that when I, you know, talked to you guys, when I was truly in the midst of the thick of it, that was valuable in terms of people feeling less alone and understood and not as isolated. And so I hope that that transparency and that being very raw at that time was helpful, but that's really not where I'm at anymore. And I don't want, you know, I can't pretend to be back there. I can't pretend to, when you're in a war, when you're fighting in a war, you identify yourself as a soldier, and that's, you know, really your identity. And for a long time, that was my major identity. I was in a war against PTSD, and, I identified myself by that, you know, by that fight. That's, I was a soldier in that, and I'm no longer in the thick of it. And, you know, now that's sort of in my rearview mirror, and it can be tempting to say, I don't want to talk about it anymore. That chapter is closed. And I want to get on with my life and not talk about it and not revisit that darkness in any way, shape, or form. I've, you know, lost so many years to it. One could look at it that way, or one could say I've invested so many years in growth from it, which I prefer to look at it that way, because that's equally true. And so it's somewhat of a discipline for me to be like, hold up, you know, you owe people as much or more about, you know, where you are now and how you got there. And so it's vaguely uncomfortable, to be honest, to reach back and say, well, you know, this is where I'm at, even though I'm feeling so much lighter now, this is how I got to this light point, and have to revisit that, because it's, you know, it does get old. My concession to myself is that I would like to, you know, really in equal parts talk about how good life is now, in the hopes, and it's always truly with the hope that that's not going to make anybody feel alienated or behind or as if they're not doing as well or they should be where I'm at or any of that, but just so that you can cling to that, because if you've listened to some of the earlier podcasts, you will know in what a bad place I was, and I usually didn't record. I almost never did record when I was truly in a terrible place, so it was even worse than that, and now I'm not, and so I want to really celebrate that and talk a lot about how great life is now so that you can hear it, but I, in equal parts, need to be disciplined about telling you the nitty-gritty, which happened along the way. And I think I've really delved a lot into which parts of therapy, what kind of therapy helped me, what kind of major epiphanies I had through therapy already. In the last few months, though, I feel like I've really leveled up. This is a process, and this healing process is just not linear, as we all know. It's you're two steps forward, 16 steps back, it feels like sometimes. And that's normal, you know, as you, especially with complex PTSD, as you unravel what happened and you come to terms with it and you come to grips with it and you stop trying to shine a turd and call it a diamond. For want of a better, that's such an ugly analogy, but it's really what it is, out of denial and what have you, you know, you heal gradually, little bit by little bit, because you understand yourself and you understand why you're triggered and you are able to extricate your behaviors from who you are, what your soul is, and it's got nothing to do with PTSD, it's got nothing to do with trauma, it's got nothing to do with what happens when you're dealing with that trauma. I'm really hoping that that yapping dog is not showing up on this recording. I might need to take a break just to hear. But it's, you know, it's all part of the process. So what I'm about to talk about, I feel like came toward the end of a process of actually understanding and coming to terms with the fact that abuse did occur and violation and assaults and terrible, you know, unspeakable things occurred, that I really needed to just see for what they were and to see for, you know, without any kind of pretense, without any justification for who did it and why, and it's not that bad and it's not this. Yes, it is that bad and was that terrible and all those things, and it needs to be unraveled and seen as profoundly terrible as it was for me to be able to extricate who I am from that. So that's all really important. And that's why I'm just like, you know, weekly plug for therapy. But what I'm talking about today is this leveling up beyond that, because I honestly do think that I really did understand as much as I could, or, you know, I always stand to be corrected, but there came a time where I needed to take personal responsibility. And that's kind of like, either people love that phrase or they hate that phrase, depending on where they are in their life. So listen to how you feel when I say personal responsibility. Note how you feel in your body right now, I would recommend. And pay attention to that. And if it makes you feel instantly defensive, Ask yourself why. Because people who are taking personal responsibility for everything in their life and their happiness, people who are actively doing that feel empowered and are really excited by that phrase. They're like, yes, that is the key to freedom. That means I can do whatever the hell I like. That means I can feel however I like. That means that my future is mine. But people who aren't ready to let go of the story or the crutch or the victimhood or whatever. And you know what? That was me for a long time. And there are reasons for that. There are valid reasons for that. And it's part of the healing process. And sometimes you just aren't. And that's also okay. But take note of how you feel and put that in the back of your mind and keep revisiting it, because as time goes on, you might feel less and less threatened by that phrase, like you need to take responsibility. You might feel less angered by it. You might feel less triggered. You might feel less irritated, and you might feel less inclined to say, well, that's easy for you to say with your this and your that and your that, making your life so much easier than mine. All those things I've said, and so I'm speaking completely from a place of I've been there, done that, and when I was ready to let that go, I was able to level up. Now, I honestly do think it's a process, though, to get to that point. You have to go through all the things, you know, just like with stages of grief, with stages of PTSD. I talked in the podcast before last, or maybe even this last one, I think, with Joe, about the need for rage, that I heard that there is no forgiveness without rage, that you have to feel the full extent of, yes, I was violated in this way, and that is a terrible wrong, and I am angry about it. And then that burns out, and that is left behind, and it's healthy, and it's okay, so long as we don't dwell and get stuck or enjoy it too much or make it become our new identity. So, you know, if it's triggering to you to hear about personal responsibility, then this isn't for you. Then, like, tune out and, you know, maybe come back to this one at another point. That's totally fine. I'm not here to hurt or upset or make anybody feel worse than they already do. If this, the sound of that phrase, personal responsibility, gives you a sense of hope and excitement, at this point, then like, let's talk, because when you're ready, it truly is the best news ever. It's just so exciting. So for me, personal responsibility came in the form of recognizing that I had been talking a really good game about having boundaries in my life. And, you know, I had sort of done the very overt work in that I cut off contact for the most part, but not really, not properly, with people who are truly toxic, people who were involved, people who were undermining the reality of the abuse and the violations that I had experienced as a child, who were minimizing them and making it really hard for me to wrap my mind around it and come to terms with it and then move on from it. Because when people minimize what you've been through, then your mind goes back to that childhood place of denial, and then you get stuck. So you don't want to be around those people, and those people who are part of victimizing you are the people who are going to minimize. So, you know, there's all that, and I've covered that in the past, but I came to realize that I was not, you know, I was feet in both camps. I was talking a really good game about you know, making boundaries, and this isn't going to be in my life anymore, and that's not going to be in my life anymore, and great swaths of people were cut out of my life kind of indiscriminately and regrettably. Honestly, I did lose good friends who didn't deserve to be cut out. You know, the collateral damage of what the toxic people who really did need to be cut out. I was kind of just being indiscriminate and unfair in many ways, and that's, you know, it's a messy process. But we all do the best we can when we are in the thick of things. And now that I know better, I really do try to do better. So, where was I after all those millions of asides? This is how I roll. Okay. So I read this brilliant article one day. I was finding myself frequently triggered still. I was finding myself constantly feeling on edge and afraid of being offended and very easily offended. I was thin-skinned. I would lash out. And honestly, you know, I was doing significantly better, but then I would be triggered out of nowhere and be just so enraged by that and disappointed by that and dismayed and depressed, obviously, because why does this keep happening? And then one day the penny dropped in the form of an article that I read. And it took me a couple of days to actually put that into effect. But I read, and I'm going to read you an excerpt from this article because I cannot say it or any better than it's been said in this article. I can't paraphrase it any more effectively. So I'm going to link to this article on my webpage after I publish this. And I really encourage you, if you've had issues with boundaries with people, if you suspect that you're dealing with some form of a narcissist in your life, and often people who have been abused and are empaths and sort of have these holes in their own heart and psyche, will gravitate towards and attract narcissists. So it's super common for abuse victims to attract narcissists like a moth to a flame. And the more damaged you are, the more into you they will be. And the more well you are, the more they will distance themselves naturally or lose interest in you. So that's a very, very good sign. Or they will try harder. They will double down in trying to, when they see signs of health, they will double down at first, trying to sort of undermine you. So I think that this is really kind of relevant to a lot of people if I have listeners who are dealing with PTSD. But the part that really struck me was where I realized I was going to have to take personal responsibility. And it's an article about it's called Why Do People Believe Narcissists Rather Than Their Victims? And that's not the part that it's sort of misleading title for what I really want to zoom in on here, because I want to zoom in on what we can do. Because truly, what do we have control over in our lives? We do not have control over a narcissist. You're never going to control a narcissist. Okay, just don't even try. Total losing battle. You don't want to engage in that. That is such a waste of your one wild and precious life. Don't try. What we can control is how we respond and the boundaries we put up. And she quotes, the author of this article actually quotes The Sociopath Next Door by Dr. Martha Stout. And she says, in The Sociopath Next Door, Dr. Martha Stout astutely notes that a part of a healthy conscience is being able to confront the conscienceless. Unfortunately, our society is ill-equipped to deal with the danger of malignant narcissists in our midst. Why? Because when someone is rude to us, abuses us, or mistreats us in any way, we fall into the trap of projecting our own sense of morality, conscience, and empathy onto them. We rationalize that it was probably a misunderstanding. We minimize the amount of damage done, believing our rights are not as important as the aggressor's. After all, that is what the aggressor has trained and conditioned us to believe. They have done plenty of gaslighting to get us to this point. We fall prey to wanting social validation and approval. We see social proof that this person is well-liked, so it must be because they are a good person. Now, as an aside, this is me speaking. This person may not even be well-liked. Maybe there's a lot of people that think this person is no good. But they might have tapped into you that they are misunderstood, and you might feel like some kind of savior complex, or this person gets me. Or they might have been kind to you on several occasions. In fact, they almost always are. That they dispense kindness very, very judiciously, very cleverly, so that you become addicted to these rushes of when they actually treat you really well. And then you're kind of, you hang around for the next time they might do that. So you know, if you're like, well, this doesn't apply to me because my person nobody really likes anyway, and I'm the only person, and I'm all they have and all that stuff, because this is a very common issue as well for abuse victims who take care of their abusers when they were little. That's what I did. I took care of my abuser. My preoccupation for my entire adult life was reforming. I hope he doesn't go to hell. I don't want my family to fall apart. I don't want anything bad to happen to him. And that became a pattern in my life with other predatory people or other people who wanted to violate my boundaries. When they did, I was concerned about them. Or like they would just in time, they would sort of drop a sob story or make me feel bad for them or, you know, what have you, so that I would be distracted from what they had just done and feel bad for them, or, oh, this is to be expected, and I also don't treat people well when I'm not in a good place, and blah, 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 blah. So I just wanted as an aside to add that, because it's not always this way that it's like that other people like them. Frequently they are well-liked and very charming and very dynamic, and, you know, they've very carefully cultivated their image so that when their victims speak up, everybody will be like, you're crazy. But there are times when you seem to be the only person that understands them. Okay, so back to quoting this book. She says, why are conscience-bound human beings so blind? And why are they so hesitant to defend themselves and the ideals and people they care about from the minority of human beings who possess no conscience at all? And this is the nugget that really hit home for me. A large part of the answer has to do with the emotions and thought processes that occur in us when we are confronted with sociopathy. I can never do this properly. You know what I'm saying. Okay, back to the quote. We are afraid, and our sense of reality suffers. We think that we are imagining things or exaggerating, or that we ourselves are somehow responsible for the sociopath's behavior. Now, that's the end of the quote from The Sociopath Next Door, but goes on to quote this article. I'm going on. So she says, instead of facing, and this was the part that really whacked me upside the head, instead of facing the fearful truth that there are people with no empathy or remorse, we ignore our gut instincts and gaslight ourselves. We forget that our inner guidance is often on point, that we might be seeing something others are refusing to see. When the emperor has no clothes, we may be the only ones brave enough to call it out, but that doesn't make us wrong just because we are in the minority. It makes us among the more discerning of our peers. Rather than falling into the trap of silencing ourselves, it's important to validate our voices, blah, blah, blah. Okay, I don't want to get into that part. I want to focus and really zoom on the part that really helped me. Kirsty, you have got to take personal responsibility. Stop complaining about the narcissists in your life or the toxic people in your life gaslighting you and treating you in ways that you don't think are good, and freaking take care of it. You are in control of what you're in control of. And I realized right then that I was addicted to gaslighting myself, and like, this isn't so bad, and really buying into, well, if this person treated me badly, then I must have deserved it in some way. At first I'd get really angry and really triggered and feel really terrible, and then I would try and draw attention. That wasn't very nice what you did. That's not very kind. That's not very, like, can't you see? And then the person would be like, you're crazy. And then I would allow myself to believe that it's just nonsense, okay? And suddenly I was like, why do you keep gaslighting yourself? Like, you know what your boundaries are. You know, you have raised 5 children. You know what kind behavior is. You know what sensitive and courteous behavior is. You know what being a good friend is. You know all these things. You are now a big grown-up girl. Stop it. Stop accepting bad behavior from people and getting mad about it and expecting them to change and begging them to change and asking them to see things from your point of view. They cannot. They do not have those wells of empathy to draw upon. You cannot make somebody change. You cannot make somebody more empathetic. You cannot get closure from somebody who cannot see that they've done you harm and is incapable of giving a genuine apology and might even be allergic or just like so incapable of even pretending to give an apology. They might be at that point that they won't even give an apology. The closest they can come is, I'm sorry you feel that way. You know, stop it. There's nothing you can do about this person. This person isn't asking for your help to change. They don't want to change. They like how they are. They like it just fine. You're the one who doesn't want to feel this way anymore. You're the one who doesn't want to feel, you know, abused. You're not the one who doesn't want to feel like your trust has been trampled over and over again. You are the one who doesn't want to come away feeling, you know, from interactions, feeling like there's something very wrong with that, and feeling and having your sense of peace stirred up. You're the one. You know what you want to feel, so then fix it so that you can feel that way. Don't try to make other people act the way you think they should. Maybe they just cannot, you know? You need to act the way you think you should so you can feel how you should. And that's may look different for every single person. You might have no choice but to continue to engage with somebody in your life. Maybe this person is your boss and you need to keep your job for whatever reason. I don't recommend working in a toxic environment if you can get out of it, but I'm not going to pass judgment or advice on how you run your life. I'm just saying, if you don't see a way that you can get out of it, you can recognize that you're in control of your emotions, that you are in control of how you feel. And the way we do this is when we do not allow somebody's violation of our boundaries to be okay in our mind in any way, shape, or form. We do not gaslight ourselves to say, well, that was okay. And you don't even have to tell the person that was not okay. You have to just be very clear with yourself. That was not okay. And I'm completely confident that that was not okay. What they just did was not okay. Now, I can respond with feeling offended and hurt, but I'm not going to. I choose not to. I choose to believe that this person reacted in a really antisocial and unkind way, and I'm not going to make that anything okay in my mind. All right. So if you're forced to have to interact with this person, this is my go-to. If you're forced to interact with this person, you have to be around them. Don't try to massage it in your mind somehow this person's okay. Don't gaslight yourself like, oh, that was okay. I guess I deserved this. I guess maybe I did make them mad. I guess maybe I am dumb. I guess, you know, blah, blah, blah. Don't do that. Make it very clear in your mind, okay, this person is damaged and behaved in an unacceptable way, and whatever their pain is, I feel bad for them, and I feel, you know, I don't feel malice towards them, I don't feel anger towards them, I wish them well, but how they acted toward me is not about me, it is about them, 100% about them. And you've got to stop gaslighting yourself and have that inner dialogue. Well, maybe I did, maybe there is something to this, maybe I am, maybe I do. Don't do that. Okay, now of course, first prize is just getting them out of your life. Just stop. Life's short. There's tons of people in the world. Most of them, I'd venture to say, are good and kind and worthy of, you know, interacting with. And if you've got somebody who's not there for you or doesn't make you feel good more often than bad, a lot more often than bad, a ton more often than bad, then make a graceful exit, not with malice, not with anger, not with, you know, vengeful thoughts or anger. You can just say, this isn't working out for either me nor you. And the thing is that when it's not working out for you, it's not working out for that person either. Because if you are allowing somebody to abuse you, then how is that good for them? It's not good to abuse people. It's not good for the soul for people to abuse. So don't be part of that dynamic. Don't be part of the dynamic of allowing somebody to abuse you. It's not doing them any good. You're not doing anybody any good by allowing them. There's this weird misplaced loyalty to other people, like, I need to be there for them. But they're mistreating you, and you're allowing that, and that's very bad for them. It's bad for you. It's also bad for them. So if you want to come from a place of love and wholeness and no anger, no malice, no junk, that's a really good way to think about it. Another really important thing to remember, particularly if you're getting over childhood-based PTSD, complex PTSD, is that your child self needs to be able to trust your adult self to take care of business, to take care of them. And if you continue to let people violate your boundaries, even a little bit, you're betraying the trust that your child self has in your adult self, and that will continue to arrest your development. So if you are making any kind of concessions in what you know in your soul is best for you and your peace of mind, and you are allowing or you are gaslighting yourself, and you are allowing your boundaries to be loosey-goosey and making excuses for people and making excuses for yourself, in letting people violate them from time to time, your child self is watching and paying attention and is not safe with you, will not trust you, does not believe that you are in the driver's seat. And that's what makes the child self act up. That's what makes the sense of insecurity and unhappiness and thin-skinned and easily offended and hurt and wounded and depressed and all these things. You are showing your child self that you're not in control. The adult who knows what's best and will keep them safe is not doing their job. So if that helps you to think about it that way, like you owe it to the child who is trying to heal to be the responsible and protective adult that they didn't have in their youth, that you know, because you want to transcend that. No, it's not fun to be a hurt little child when you are an adult. And that's basically, you know, what PTSD, complex PTSD, does to us. It just triggers these frightened, insecure, angry feelings. You know, we've all seen a kid who's feeling insecure act up, and they're not pleasant to be around. They're not a lot of fun because they want to be reassured all the time. If they're feeling insecure and they're feeling, you know, shaken by the environment or the way their parents are acting or, you know, their place in the world, they're going to be unpleasant. They're going to be whiny. They're going to be clingy. They're going to have tantrums. They're going to act up in some way because they're trying to, you know, they're testing the boundaries. They're testing to see if their parents are who they thought they were, and they'll, you know, become what they were before. This is why a child who's playing beautifully by themselves will be great until you get on the phone with somebody else, and then they're tugging at you because they want to make sure, are you still there for me? Even though I didn't need you and I don't, I want to make sure that you're still there for me. It's this sort of primal thing. Like, I just want to make sure that you know that you're still my caregiver and I'm your priority. And this is why the wounded child from complex PTSD or PTSD at all will act up. If you are not showing that you love yourself enough to not gaslight yourself, because it's watching. You can gaslight yourself all you like, but the child knows. The child knows all too well when the boundaries are being violated. So that's another way of looking at it. You know, do it for the child so that you can transcend. And there's really no way to get properly better when you're loosey-goosey with your boundaries. So, yeah, that is my nugget for today. And I've got a couple more that in the last few months have really and truly helped me. I want to say that, you know, I really want to reiterate that none of this enforcing of boundaries, and sometimes that does mean saying goodbye, and that does mean saying, you know, this is our final chapter, we're not going to talk anymore, but I wish you well. I say that truly, this kind of boundary enforcing allows you to be a kind and forgiving person. And I do believe that ultimately, no matter what wrong you've experienced, the true path to absolute healing is forgiveness and recognizing that everybody has a path and experiences that we know nothing about, and opening up your heart to understand that. And if a person is a sociopath, that is a part that you don't understand and they're there and it's not for you to figure out or to fix or to be angry about because it's not going to change anything. We've all heard that old adage, being angry and not forgiving people is like drinking poison and hoping they will die. And that's so true. But we cannot forgive unless we really are firm on our boundaries. So figure out what those are, become really clear about them, and then do whatever you need to do to make sure you stay true to them. And like I said, that can just be very quietly in your heart, an acknowledgement of that was not okay, but it is my choice as to how I react. And when you recognize that it was not okay and that it's exterior from you and do not personalize it, then it can't affect you negatively. You can just be like, well, the way that person acted was unacceptable. It has nothing to do with me. It has to do with them. And I'm not going to internalize this. And if that becomes too grueling and unpleasant, as it very well might, then, you know, it's time to move on and clear that space in your life. One last thing before I close is you will not ever get closure from a narcissist, an abuser who's unrepentant, and a narcissistic abuser almost always will be, because they just can't acknowledge that they're in the wrong. They just don't have the ability to do that. You're not going to get closure from them. Do not ask somebody else to heal you. Do not ask somebody else to give you closure. Closure is the gift that you give yourself. And that also comes through boundaries. So boundaries are beautiful, as I've said many times before. And, you know, think about yours and respect and love them and realize that they're there to protect you and your inner child and your actual children, if you have them, and your peace and your happiness and your family and everything that's good. I will talk to you again very soon, next week at the latest, because I have a couple of other nuggets that have just been really helping me to level up in a whole new way, and I look forward to that very, very much. If you found this episode helpful, please share it with anyone you think might benefit from it. And if you want to get in touch with me, I'm Kirsty Sayer at gmail.com, or you can contact me at Kirsty at oneinchpastscary.com. So and anywhere on social media. I'm Momity Kirsty on Instagram. I really should change that name, but it's kind of sentimental to me. So yeah, please, I'd love your input and ideas and feedback. Take care. Talk to you very soon. Bye.